This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, we're covering the dip in the big summer movie season. This is, of course, right after Captain America comes out. And we get some smaller movies, The Darkness and Money Monster, coming out. Also in limited release, we have High Rise, The Man Who Knew Infinity, and The Family Fang. I'll also be talking about some juicy news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and, of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And, of course, you can reach out to me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Thank you, Ron Burgundy. Let's jump into the news. One little piece of development news that I find so interesting is 20th Century Fox has announced, and this has been rumored for a while, but apparently it was confirmed this week, that Wolverine 3 will in fact be rated R, and it's going to have a, quote, violent Western tone. This is obviously, of course, a response to the wild success of Deadpool that came out back in February and became the highest grossing Fox superhero movie ever. Keeping in mind, Marvel Studios has all the Avengers movies and Fox has the X-Men, and Sony had Spider-Man until it was going back into Marvel. The X-Men movies have done well, but they've never blown up to the level that Avengers were. Ironically, had X-Men not become a huge thing at the box office back in 2000, you would never have had the Avengers movies. But let's not go into that looping discussion. This is, of course, exciting fans because Wolverine's always been incredibly violent. He's got knives for his hand. He is Freddy Krueger incarnate, essentially. He just slices people up. And all the X-Men movies and the Wolverine movies have been very safely PG-13. But Logan and the character in the comics is not a squeaky clean character. It gets bloody. The catch is, will you be able to market an R-rated Wolverine movie? And the question is whether Deadpool was such a success because of the R rating or just because that's the way the character was and it was just an entertaining movie. And I said this way back when Deadpool came out. Does this mean we need to have R-rated comic book movies? We've had them in the past, The Punisher and Watchmen, but they've never been huge films. And the fact that Deadpool made $360 some million in the States, that suddenly says, oh, hey, there might be a market here. You also have to look at why Deadpool was successful. Making an R-rated Superman movie may not be the best choice, and we'll see what happens with an R-rated Wolverine movie. The next piece of news, which is a little more somber and serious, is the civil trial is underway in regards to the Colorado theater shooting, which is a group of, I think, 27 plaintiffs. Well, 27 plaintiffs under one lawyer and then another person representing themselves, suing in civil court Cinemark for the Colorado theater shooting that happened in Aurora, Colorado at the midnight showing of The Dark Knight Rises back in 2012. I am not a fan of this civil suit because I think it's bollocks. It represents the worst in victim society. And look, I am sorry these people were either injured themselves or lost loved ones. That's a horrible thing. But suing the theater is like suing that church in South Carolina that was shot up, what, a year or two ago? To me, it's just a huge money grab because it's not going to bring back these people. And it's not Cinemark's fault that this happened. This theater had exactly the same security as other theaters. I go to theaters all the time. I have gone out multiple different exits of various theaters, and they don't have closed circuit cameras that they're keeping monitoring. They don't have outside patrolling security. What happened in Colorado was a person taking advantage of a public place. Cinemark could have neither foreseen this guy attacking the theater, nor could they have taken any sort of realistic measures to protect everybody because it wasn't a danger until then. It would be like suing the airlines for allowing the hijackings to take place in 9/11. This was unforeseen. On top of it, the 28th plaintiff is a survivor who's representing herself. She says she was emotionally damaged, and she was in an auditorium down the hall. I don't think she was in the auditorium. The bullets went through the wall and hit a couple people in another auditorium. I don't even think it's that person. To me, this is the biggest cash grab ever. It's that mentality of, I was wronged, and I need money, and I need money from somebody, so I'm going to go to the corporation to do it. Not the person who caused it, but the corporation. Shame on you people. This is not an appropriate way to handle your grief. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Just one trailer this week, and that is because I'm probably going to spend a lot of time talking about it, and that is Yoga Hosers, which is Kevin Smith's new film, starring his daughter who can't act, Johnny Depp who can act but is terrible, and Johnny Depp's daughter who is probably the most compelling thing on screen, but she doesn't even try very hard. That trailer dropped this week, and oh, it's a doozy. It opens on July 29th. Let's take a listen.
Bonjour.
You're the legendary manhunter from Quebec.
Yes, I am that man.
Colleen?
I need both of you to help me solve this quite queer case.
Use the Bratzies.
What is a Bratzie?
It's like a foot tall Nazi and it's made of bratwurst.
This is Kevin Smith completely blowing up his career right now. Now, I haven't seen the movie either. So, I mean, I've seen, what, the minute and a half of the trailer. But I'll say, this trailer looks more than anything like Kevin Smith needs to stop smoking pot now. He is an incredibly talented guy who is squandering his talent because his skin is so thin, he can't take any form of rejection or criticism. And it's sad because he's had chances to grow. And there's, you know, Jersey Girl was a chance to grow. And he did grow as a filmmaker. Red State, he grew as a filmmaker. Always retreating back to like Clerks 2 and Zack and Miri. And Tusk was a great chance for him to grow. And he did some neat stuff with Tusk. Of course, in the middle of it, he took his pants down and took a big dump on the entire movie. And then what he did is he made a movie out of that. This film isn't even original. It's Clerks with girls in it. Using the most annoying character from Tusk. This is the epitome of Kevin Smith just wallowing in his own filth. And it's like a good artist who was once great, and Pablo Picasso being this great artist, and then smearing his own feces on a wall. That is essentially what this looks like to me. It looks terrible. And it stars his daughter, whose only acting credits are associated with him. His daughter, I will go on record and say, Hayley Quinn Smith, everything I've seen her in, she's not a good actor. She's like passable as an extra, but she is not a good actor. Lily Rose Depp has a certain charisma on screen, but that is mainly because she just won the lottery of being Johnny Depp's daughter and her mother's a model. I mean, she has that. Hayley Quinn Smith, I mean, this is nepotism at its finest. And I've heard people say, oh, he just wants, you know, wouldn't you do this for your kids? No, I wouldn't just make movies only for my kid. Look, if all of your credits are movies that your father directs, that does not mean anything. Hence, why she's not gotten any roles outside of anything her father's directed. This looks terrible. I mean, this looks seriously like he was on a week-long pot bender and never been not high and decided to make an entire movie out of it and then say, oh, no, it's just what I think's funny. I don't even think he'd think this was funny or entertaining if he didn't make it. I had a friend once who was telling me about pot. I don't smoke pot, but I had a friend who was telling me about pot, and he says, well, the difference is, in a normal state of mind, you know, like if you're drunk, you feel like you're messed up. Oh, ha-ha, isn't it funny? He says, when you're high, the entire world is messed up, and that's why it's hilarious, even if it's completely mundane. And that's essentially what this is. This feels like a drug movie that's not even, like, culturally significant as a drug movie. You know, I mean, it's not even like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas or Yellow Submarine, for that matter. Yoga Hosers looks terrible. That's it for the segment. I took up all my time talking about Kevin Smith and his terrible acting daughter. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Darkness and Money Monster. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews. Let's start with The Darkness. A troubled son connects with evil spirits that come after his family and their home.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Can you tell Michael to stay out of my room? He keeps leaving dirty hand marks everywhere.
We never talk about him. We never talk about how he affects all of us. It's getting creepier and creepier.
Getting angry doesn't help.
You're scaring him.
He's scaring me.
Where you've been is the home of very powerful spirits.
The god you might be familiar with cannot help you now.
This is one of those weird oddities of horror movie releases. And I think the reason they're releasing it this week, because May is not a horror movie month. May has never been a horror movie month. Horror movie months are October, August even. August is big for horror movies because a lot of people are just checking stuff out right before the end of school. January and February are also huge horror movie months. Summertime, not so much. There have been some summertime horror movies that do well, like The Conjuring. But generally, horror movies, at least the mainstream horror movies, are meant for sort of like the fall and the winter. May is such an odd time, and I think the reason you're getting this in May is for no other reason than the Friday the 13th release date. Of course, it's not a Friday the 13th movie. It's not even rated R. It's PG-13, which is a huge red flag for anybody who's a true horror fan. And this movie epitomizes everything that's wrong with mainstream horror. I like the stuff James Wan's given us over the last couple years, The Conjuring and Insidious. But the real innovative stuff is happening in the on-demand and much smaller limited releases. Studios like Magnet and IFC and Scream Factory, these places are actually giving the most innovative, true horror movies out there. What you end up with The Darkness is that teeny bopper crowd. It's a PG-13. It's the worst you'd get with PG-13 horror. There's nothing original in the film. There are no real scares except for jump scares and startling. Anything that happens that could be shocking. In fact, there's one scene where I was like, something was horrible was happening, and all they did was show people's faces. And that's because they're cutting for a PG-13 movie. And it just loses any sort of teeth that it could have. We've seen this sort of thing so many times before. It reminds me of movies like The Apparition was another example of just a neutered PG-13 horror movie. And it starred Ashley Greene from the Twilight movies. There was no oomph to it. There's no real scares in the movie. The other problem with this film is the family is awful to each other. Now, part of it's supposed to be they're being impacted by these demons, but you never get the sense that they were a happy family to begin with. The guy's had an affair, the wife's an alcoholic, the girl's bulimic, the son's autistic and has a load of just social interaction problems. They all hate each other. And I'm like, the real horror would be if they had to just live their everyday lives. Because they're just so unappealing to each other. It's almost impossible to talk about because it's just so pablum and bland. It's and every beat along the way is something we've seen a million times before. Oh, there's a kid, and he's autistic in this one because that's the new trend now in movies. And then it has strange things happening, and then they gotta call in some, like, exorcist sort of preacher, mystic medium type person. It's all the things we've seen before. It's essentially Poltergeist, the remake from last year, just without the name recognition of Poltergeist. This is not a good movie. It's something that's almost offensive to horror fans because it's not a horror movie. So I'm going to have to say that The Darkness sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on to Money Monster. George Clooney plays a fast-talking TV show host who is taken hostage by a man who lost everything in the stock market.
Cut the feed.
Whoever's in there, turn the cameras on.
Turn the cameras off, Patty. Turn it on,
what am I going to do?
Turn them on.
Put it up.
I might be the one with the gun here, but I'm not the real criminal. It's people like these guys. They're stealing everything from us, and they're getting away with it, too. How's that even fair?
Just keep talking to him, all right? You're good at that.
You lost a lot of money when the market tanked. I'll get you some answers.
Nobody was asking any questions before. These guys could expose everything.
We both want an explanation for what went wrong.
We don't know.
This is directed by Jodie Foster. That's, I think, important to note. Because, I mean, she's done four or five movies. But, you know, she did, in terms of feature films, she did The Beaver a couple years ago. And she hadn't done anything for, like, 20 years before that. So she's directed before, but not often. And this is her getting behind the camera. And she's actually not a bad director. She can put together a good movie. And the technique of the movie making process is actually really good. George Clooney's great in it. Julia Roberts is actually really fantastic in it as well. And she's kind of blown hot and cold. I mean, overdoing it in movies like Secret in Their Eyes. And then I don't know what the heck she did in Mother's Day, but she did something. And the cast is really good. It's got a lot of energy. There's parts in the story where you expect it to go one way and it really shifts and does something different and unique. And that's kind of cool. I mean, whereas The Darkness had no original idea in it at all, this one has some really nice little twists in the story and the plot and the characters, which I was like, I didn't expect that. You were really leading me down one way and you blindsided me with something else. That was actually really cool. You know, kudos to Jodie Foster for being able to do that. That's some good directing right there. The big problem I had with this movie was the story ultimately was just too contrived. It was a corny, cliched villain, the bad guy behind the thing that they're trying to uncover. Not the guy who took them hostage, but, you know, the people who are behind the money issue. And it has this very trite, almost unbelievable resolution. It kind of feels like it was like a Michael Crichton book that he had written and just hadn't developed the story well enough, but got all the technical elements around it done right. Look, there's so many things that can go wrong in the stock market, and the financial system is prone to savage ups and downs, and it is very risky, even when people tell you there's little or no risk. There is always a chance of losing everything. I talked about a movie a couple weeks ago called Boom Bust Boom, and that just talked about the bubbles and the bursting that happens in the financial system. And there have been some fantastic movies about greed in the stock market and how it can spiral out of control. I mean, just this last Christmas, we had The Big Short, which was a fantastic look at the flaws in our financial system. You had movies like The Wolf of Wall Street or Margin Call. These are a lot of well-made movies that expose the problems that are causing financial havoc at times, and greed and corruption and how people can rig the system for themselves. I mean, that there's a great scene with Matthew McConaughey, is one scene in The Wolf of Wall Street that kind of explains it all. But this movie doesn't do that. It has this opportunity to address these issues and make it almost a very pragmatic, real-world movie, but it just kind of turns into, you know, like a Michael Crichton book. I mean, it's still well done, and it's still an entertaining film, and it doesn't overstay its welcome, and the characters are composed very well, except for the bad guy. And it really gives you a sense of purpose, and you can get behind the people, and I wasn't bored. But it could have been a much more impactful film had it not just had that TV movie of the week feel to it. But still, ultimately, Money Monster was enjoyable. It's worth checking out. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to hit the smaller movies, High Rise and The Man Who Knew Infinity.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing on with the movie reviews. Let's talk about High Rise. A skyscraper apartment complex mirrors the economic strata of society, resulting in a terrifying rebellion.
For all its inconveniences, Lang was satisfied with life in the High Rise.
You don't know how things work around here, do you?
I'm a fast learner.
Which floor are you?
25.
We're down in the bottom, in all sorts of shadows. Most families are.
We pay the same charges as the top floors. We want our fair share of the power.
How's the high life?
Prone to fits of mania, narcissism, and power failure.
I actually had a chance to see this a couple months ago at the 33rd Annual Ohio Science Fiction 24-Hour Movie Marathon. It was one of their anchor premieres, and we hadn't had a good, solid anchor premiere like this in a while. It's more speculative fiction than sci-fi. So the fact that I saw it at a sci-fi marathon does not make it hard science fiction. It's more realistic fantasy, but sort of boxed in deliberately. So you get a reaction in a way that is unrealistic. And what's funny is at this marathon, at the science fiction and horror marathon, there's a long history of showing the works of David Cronenberg. And recently they had shown at an all-night event Shivers, which also had been alternately released in America as They Came From Within. But most people know that movie as Shivers, and it was made in the 70s. It just reeks of the 70s. And it likewise takes place in this exclusive high-rise apartment building, and it's much more overt body horror and psychosexual horror in Shivers. But High-Rise is a great companion piece for that. It stars Tom Hiddleston and a couple other people that you'll recognize, like Luke Evans. You've got Jeremy Irons in it. You've got Sienna Miller, Elizabeth Moss. It's got a great cast. It's directed by Ben Wheatley, who did movies like Kill List, who's a bit of a fringe director. He's not doing any big, he's not doing the next Marvel movie or anything like that. But his name shows up, especially in horror and more edgy filmmaking. I think he's done stuff like in the VHS series. This is a neat movie in the sense that it is a fantastic allegory of society. Now, the movie does box itself in quite literally, because at some point you're like, well, why did you just leave the apartment? It's society within, it's sort of this Lord of the Flies society breaking down. And of course, instead of the strata of society, you literally have the strata of the building. The lower floors are the lower economic people. The higher floors are the wealthier, more exclusive people, and there's oppression and there's a disproportionate use of resources within the building. It's actually an incredibly smart allegory to real life, kind of conceptualized in this apartment complex. And it escalates very fast and it gets out of control very quickly. It doesn't make as much pragmatic sense as a regular film, I guess, should. I remember finishing the movie and thinking that went through the motions of things happening without actually having a specific point that's hammered home, which is okay. I don't mind a film not over-explaining itself. But it's less about the story and more about what happens between characters, because the story's kind of all over the place and a bit hard to follow. This is not a standard mainstream release. And that's okay, because we need those now and then. And you can find it playing around the country, and it looks great on the big screen. There's so much about this that is very cinematic. It has gorgeous visuals, especially from the ivory tower look of the high rise. And it takes place in an indeterminate time. It really feels like the 60s and 70s, but it also feels very modern at times. And since everything takes place almost entirely within this high rise complex, you don't get a sense of the exact date. On top of it, it has this fantastic soundtrack, which is very popular now, this sort of synth soundtrack, something that was extremely common in the 80s. One of the best examples with the best soundtrack of that you're ever going to hear is Beyond the Black Rainbow. It has a great soundtrack for that. If you see Turbo Kid, which is a retro movie anyways, that has that synth soundtrack. It Follows from last year, that has a similar synth-sounding soundtrack. It's a beautifully made movie that has flaws, but it's still incredibly interesting to see more of a conversation piece than an actual specific narrative. But I'm still going to have to say that High Rise kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Man Who Knew Infinity. The life and work of Srinivasa Ramanujan is profiled in this period biopic.
Don't be intimidated. Great knowledge comes from the humblest of origins.
For the good of everybody, you should attend some lectures.
But I'm here to publish.
We need proofs of your work.
But they are right, sir.
I hadn't completed that proof. How do you know?
I just do.
How do you know that theorem?
It came to me. These steps you want, I do not know how to do. Don't you know what I've given up to be here? I have nothing.
There's one thing about this movie that just sort of irritates me. And it is whenever there's a movie, particularly in a British production movie, and they have to cast an Indian guy, they always end up casting Dev Patel, who's not actually from India. He's British himself. So he's learned to put on an Indian accent to do films like The Best Marigold Hotel and The Second Best Marigold Hotel. And, of course, this movie, The Man Who Knew Infinity. Nothing against Dev Patel, but there's literally an entire continent of Indian actors that give you other options than just Dev Patel in your movies. He's become the token Indian guy in especially British film. And I'd like to see somebody else. I'm not a huge fan of his. I thought he was great in Slumdog Millionaire, but I really don't think he's... I don't think he's really got the acting chops. I've seen better Indian actors in Indian films. And he plays an Indian. I mean, you could just take somebody from India, and if they know the language, they're not hampered by a language barrier and an accent barrier because they're supposed to have an accent. Anyways, Dev Patel plays Ramanujan, and I mean, he does a fine job as it. He's kind of just a cheeky actor. And he tries to act. I mean, he really has his moments, and he does fine. But if you compare this, if you sort of talk similar type of journeys, if you try to compare him fitting in this movie to, say, Eddie Redmayne fitting into The Theory of Everything, Eddie Redmayne felt so much more natural and worked so much better in that movie, and kind of the movie grew through him. Jeremy Irons, who's also in High Rise, plays his mentor, and he's good. Jeremy Irons is good in almost anything he does, and of course you got Toby Jones in there playing a mathematician. This film struggles with trying to make math, especially extremely high-level mathematics, relatable to the everyday viewer. And I mean, I'm not even just talking about making it relatable to somebody who, at the most, went through high school algebra and probably got a C in it. I'm talking about somebody who's taken calculus and understands how basic math works and can go into some higher math. But this is extremely high math, so you're trying to make it understandable and relatable to that audience as well. And it does to a degree, but the proofs that they're trying to do in this movie to justify Ramanujan's work are so beyond even somebody who's taken like college calculus that it has to be dumbed down insanely well. And there's a reason for that. These are the smartest people in history. So that's not who the movie's for. And I guess if you are interested in math and you like that theory, it's neat, but it's really tough balancing the significance of Ramanujan's work because it was so high level and so beyond comprehension of your average person. The human level stuff we get. He's trying to become a fellow. He's a stranger in a strange land. He's dealing with racism. He's dealing with just basic challenges. And of course, he's dealing with the onset of World War I. So there's cultural things happening. I mean, it's a fine movie, but it has trouble relating the math stuff, and it also falls into that, oh, it's a triumph for somebody of a different race, but not without the generous help of the white people involved. So there's a bit of that there, too. But then again, this was the World War I era where there really wasn't much inclusion anywhere. In the end, I'm going to give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Family Fang, the box office, and the home cinema roundup. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. I'm going to continue with the movie reviews. We've got one more film to talk about. This actually came out last week in limited release, so it's still completely fair because it's rolling around the country. A smaller movie, and that is The Family Fang. The adult children of infamous pranksters don't believe it when their parents disappear under mysterious and bloody circumstances. Then they go searching for them.
Caleb and Camille Fang are most known for creating improvised public events that incorporate their own children into the artwork.
Your family, they're famous.
Certain circles, I suppose.
This is Sheriff Hill. We have a serious situation here.
The car that is registered to your parents was found at a rest stop. There were signs of a struggle and quite a bit of blood.
This is all a performance.
What are we doing?
Huh? We're going to search for them, and we're not going to stop until we find them.
The most significant part of this film, I think, is that it's directed by Jason Bateman. And I think this is his sophomore effort. He had done the film Bad Words a couple years ago. And one of the things that kind of gets in Bateman's way as a director is he's a real sarcastic and dark-thinking individual. He has a real edge to him. And that serves him well as an actor. Now, I remember him going way back to when he was a kid and he was on Silver Spoons with Ricky Schroeder. Back then when they were like teenagers. And he was the smarmy sort of used car salesman kid, Derek, in that show. When he got to be a little bit older, he kind of went into obscurity, but he kind of came back in the 2000s as an actor because he's a good-looking guy. He's very friendly. He has that warm face that makes you feel comfortable, but he got his greatest successes either playing somebody who's the heel, like in Arrested Development. He was great in Arrested Development, just taking on all the crap from everybody else, or being in a role where he's polite and nice, but boy, he can lash out and be like this snake-tongued, sharp-witted individual. You saw that in movies like Horrible Bosses, Identity Thief. That's what Jason Bateman has become known for. And that sharp-witted, snake-tongued attack is very prevalent in his movies, as you can see when you saw Bad Words, if you saw Bad Words. But it's just that he's so sarcastic and dark at times that it doesn't make his films terribly likable. And that's part of the problem with that I had, at least, with Bad Words. This one, it's a little more understanding. There's a little more emotion, a little more even emotion. There's not as much mean-spiritedness in The Family Fang. But there definitely is a very depressing tone to it. The most impressive thing is the cast. I mean, he plays in it, and Nicole Kidman plays his sister. And she's an actress who's struggled with substance abuse and tabloid journalism. And he is a writer who, he had this big success with one book, but he's never been able to duplicate that. Christopher Walken plays his father. The parents, when they were younger, would do stunts back in the 70s and early 80s. And they do stunts where they film their kids doing something crazy. And then I don't know where they put this stuff because, you know, back then there was no YouTube. But there are these short films that supposedly they were famous for doing. And they're sort of these underground artists. And they really try and drive that home. And I guess it's easy to understand for somebody who grew up with YouTube. But when YouTube didn't exist back then, I mean, I remember back when Hardware Wars came out, which wasn't a prank. It was a spoof movie. And I remember seeing Hardware Wars in the late 70s. And they showed it on TV once or twice. But it was very hard to see these things. You maybe could get an 8mm projecting version of it. When VHS came around, sometimes some people collected these and released them. But it was very hard to see short films back then. So I don't know where the Fangs, these characters, got any sort of recognition for their work. But they clearly establish in the movie that they're known for that. The cast is great, and they work very, very well together. And it's kind of neat to see Nicole Kidman and Jason Bateman work together, not as boyfriend and girlfriend or lovers, but as brother and sister, and kind of puts them on an even playing field. And it's very vulnerable for both of them, more so for Nicole Kidman. She's not headlining this piece. It's kind of a daring role for her because it's not a scene-stealing performance, and she's working against the director as the actor. The big problem is that it's just kind of depressing. The characters are depressing. The Fangs, the grown-up Fangs, are depressing. The grown-up children Fangs are depressing. And I don't mind having dysfunctional family or dysfunctional characters. I'm a huge fan of that. One of my favorite movies of all time is Boogie Nights, which is just loaded with dysfunctional, problematic, damaged people. But that's a fine line to walk, to make them dysfunctional but lovable at the same time. And Bateman, I don't think this is a much more refined movie than Bad Words, but it's still a sophomore effort as directing films go. This might have been a better movie had he made it 3 or 4 films down the line, but this is the one he ended up doing at this point. I'd like to see him take on something a little more human and less mean-spirited and less angsty, and I'd like to see him do something and kind of work out of his comfort zone. Kind of like I talked about Kevin Smith. I mean, Kevin Smith, he retreated into his comfort zone. And Jason Bateman needs to go outside of his comfort zone. So anyways, I'm going to have to say that The Family Fang, because of a lot of the things weighting it down, I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks. But I respect it.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, was I correct? I predicted $200 million for Civil War. I said it could go even higher. I was a little bit zealous with that. It kind of came in right at expectations that Disney was having. It was in the 180s was the prediction, but it ended up actual gross $179 million, which a lot of people are like, well, is that not good? I mean, they were expecting it. Look, it's still the fifth highest grossing opening weekend ever. And if you take out the movie releases in 2015, it's the second highest opening weekend ever. Because in 2015, you had Star Wars, Avengers 2, and Jurassic World, all of which made more its opening weekend. The only other movie outside of 2015 releases that has beaten this at opening weekend is The Avengers. And if you look at the Captain America series, I think the first one made $65 million its opening weekend. The second one made $95 million its opening weekend. This one made almost $180 million its opening weekend. I mean, what's Captain America 4 going to make? It's going to have to make $300 million just to continue that pattern. It won't. Part of the reason it did so well is because, like I said last week, it serves as Avengers Part 3, just without Thor and the Hulk. So that's why it's not considered a full-blown Avengers movie, but it still uses the Avengers more than just as throwaway characters. That's still a great number. That's a fantastic number. I mean, like right now, worldwide box office, it's like in that, what, number 6 or something. Going into this weekend, by the end of the weekend, it's easily going to be the highest grossing movie of 2016. I mean, it's not going to hit that domestic level yet, but it will definitely outgross Deadpool, which I think is the highest grossing movie so far domestically. This week, look, Money Monster and The Darkness are not big movies. The Darkness is like only like 1,500 theaters, and its biggest push is being Friday the 13th as its release date, so it's a smaller release. And Money Monster, while it has some big names in it, this kind of movie never does hundreds of millions of dollars in the opening weekend. So, I mean, it's still going to do well, but it's not even going to come close to Captain America. Look for Captain America to be making, what, $85 million or so? $85 to $90 million? That's going to be its sophomore week. So this is a massive hit, no matter how you slice it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. A couple movies, not a whole lot on the shelves this week, but of course we have Deadpool, which I talked about already. A couple times has been coming up because it's such a massive hit this year. It's such a huge hit, and it's sort of revitalized, helped revitalize. I mean, it's ultimately going to make more money dollar for dollar than X-Men Apocalypse did, and it's probably going to have a much higher gross when all is said and done anyways than X-Men Apocalypse. The Boy, which is an interesting horror film. I missed it in the theaters, but I kind of respect it for how weird it is. And I like sort of British old house horror movies, even stuff like, what was it, The Quiet Ones? That's not a good movie, but there's something I like about that. It feels like an old Amicus movie in some ways. So that's worth a rental. Mustang, if you want some international movies to watch, this is an interesting look at the plight of women and girls in Turkey under an overbearing, very conservative society. And then finally, you've got Michael Moore's latest efforts, Where to Invade Next, which is standard Michael Moore stuff. Look, if you're super liberal, progressive Bernie Sanders voter, you're going to love Michael Moore's stuff. If you're a hardcore conservative, you're not going to like it. And if you're somewhere in the middle, you're going to be indifferent to it. That's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the Angry Birds movie, Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising, and The Nice Guys. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.